Congressman Bud Brown is with. Where is he? Clarence? And he asked me to be certain I thanked the Blanchester Band, since that's his hometown, and I'm very happy to do that.
What's the other band?
Oh, we got Wilmington, East Clinton, and Clinton Massey, too. Yeah. And they're all applauding because we got him out of school. I don't know why. Well, I'm very proud to be here. I've been asked by the press, what am I doing in a strong Republican area? I said, I want to make it stronger Republican. We think Ohio is very important, and we're going to carry the state of Ohio on November 2nd with your help, and that's what it's all about. In case you don't know, I want to announce also that Tom McMillan has agreed to serve as the Farmers for Ford chairman in this great state. And Tom, we appreciate that very much. We look for a lot of help and a lot of advice and anything else you can give us. No embargoes, please. I was asked between here and Lebanon, I guess before that, between Springfield and Lebanon, if I was more comfortable in one area of the country than another. Well, I guess I'd have to say yes. I come from Kansas. We're very proud to be part of rural America. I represented the biggest wheat-growing district in America for 8 years. I've been in the Senate, as many might know, for 8 years, where I'm the ranking Republican on the Senate Agriculture Committee. Prior to that time, I served 8 years in the House of Representatives, where I was a member of the House Agricultural Committee for 8 years. And so I guess if you ask me that question, I answered it very honestly. I'd say, yes, I guess I do feel more comfortable with men and women who live in rural America. I feel totally at home, and I don't feel uncomfortable with other groups in other areas, cities or whatever. But I think I really know a little about agriculture. I know a great deal, I think, about rural America. I'm very proud to be on the ticket with President Ford, and many people ask me, why were you chosen to be on the ticket? And more people are asking that every day. Why were you chosen to be on the ticket? And I'll tell you sort of how it happened. On August 19th in Kansas City, President Ford had won the nomination the night before. He had to pick a running mate, and they were going to announce that at noon on Thursday. We heard an early morning newscast which said the list had been narrowed to four. One of those was Ann Armstrong. She was in Scotland. We didn't think she could get back by noon to appear with the president, so we scratched her off the list. The second name was Bill Ruckelshaus, an outstanding Republican with a great background from the state of Indiana. But he was out in Tacoma, Washington. We didn't think he could get back. Besides, his name was pretty long for a button, so we scratched him off the list. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I told my wife, Elizabeth, I said, well, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I think we've got a chance. And that's sort of how it started that morning. And that's more or less as it happened. Then later that morning, the press started gathering in the hallway. And our room was right next to the Conley suite. And I concluded that, well, looks like Big John from Texas is going to be on the ticket. But after a little while, I told Elizabeth, I said, Elizabeth, why don't you go to the door and put your ear down there and see what they're saying out in the hallway? And that's legal in Kansas City. If you listen from the inside out, it's only when you listen from the outside in that you might get in trouble. So she did. And she heard my name and all that, and we didn't know in what context. We thought they might be having a pineapple juice party or somebody wanted relief of some kind, and they were talking about dough. But in any event, because we were so near Conley's suite, when President Ford did call, I accepted before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number. So that's sort of how it started. And our first stop was one that I took a great deal of pride in. The president wanted to start his campaign in the heartland of America, in some rural setting, and I just happened to have the town in mind. It was named Russell, Kansas, my hometown, and everybody came. But before we left for Russell, Kansas, we had some discussion with the staff, and the staff were telling the president, they were saying, "Mr. President, that's less than 24 hours' notice. A lot of people in Russell, Kansas will be busy doing other things. They probably already have their plans made." Well, I told the president that Friday afternoons would be a pretty good time to visit Russell, Kansas. It wasn't a bad time for presidents to stop by. That doesn't happen every Friday in our part of the country. And so we went to Russell, Kansas. We had a tremendous outpouring of support and people and friends, just good Americans who were concerned about the future. Some wanted to catch a glimpse of the president. Some of my creditors were there to see if I had made any headway. And others were just very happy to see us both. And that's really how it started. I want to talk for a few minutes about agriculture. I understand that probably everyone in this audience who's a farmer knows more and has more direct knowledge about agriculture than I have. Some are concerned about the direction farm programs will take. Some are concerned about what's happened in the past. I don't think there are any peanut farmers in this audience, but some may be concerned about that program. I just say at the outset that pineapple juice is a lot better for you than peanut butter. For one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. I talked with a farmer recently who just inherited a good deal of money. I said, "What are you going to do with the money?" "I'm just going to keep farming as long as it lasts." And that's sort of the input you have from American farmers. They're very independent. They're independent politically. They're independent businessmen. They don't want government interference. They don't want government regulation. They want to make their profit in the marketplace, but they want that marketplace to be unfettered. They want access to markets, export markets, domestic markets. You can't ask the farmers in one breath to plant fence to fence, and the next breath say we're going to cut off your markets. And I understand that. When the embargo was imposed in 75, I said it was a mistake. I said we had yielded the pressure from organized labor leaders. I talked to Mr. Gleason, who was head of the longshoremen. He promised me they would load the ships. They didn't load the ships. Then George Meany got into the act. And finally, President Ford, because of the pressures and because of the liberals in the Congress and the consumer groups and the labor leaders, imposed restraints. I said at the time, and I can only think of one other senator who said at the time, that that was a mistake. The other senator was Senator George McGovern from South Dakota. He hadn't gotten any help from George Meany in 1972, so he wasn't beholden to labor. I didn't see Senator Mondale speaking out against the embargo. I didn't hear anything from Governor Carter. But suddenly, this has become a very important issue in their minds. Let me just touch on it, then go on to something really important in agriculture. My first visit to second visit where Governor Carter had been, we were accused of following him around. He went to Seattle, Washington, dressed the American Legion, and I went to Seattle, Washington. He then went to Des Moines, Iowa, to address a farm group, and I went to Des Moines, Iowa, the next day to address a farm group. Now, we weren't really following him around, but we were in Iowa the day he said to several thousand farmers assembled there, "If you elect me president, embargoes will end once and for all." That's what he said. And the farmers applauded. They thought, this man makes sense. He's my kind of man. But then as he left the arena and walked to his car, whatever happened, he was asked by a reporter, "Do you really mean that?" said, well, maybe not. Maybe not. There would be extreme emergencies or other national emergencies where you'd have to impose restraints. And that's all right. I don't disagree with that policy. But what has he said in addition to that? Or what's in the Democrat platform? Well, the Democrat platform said you've got to watch these inflationary grain sales. We also have the Humphrey-Hawkins bill, which talks about export licensing. And if you haven't read, I hope you read this month's Reader's Digest, where Governor Carter is quoted. I'm not quoted. Ford's not quoted. Governor Carter is quoted as saying, one of the causes of inflation have been excessive grain sales to Russia. Now, he used the word excessive, which means we've sold too much. So I wonder where he would have drawn the line. And I just say to the farmers assembled and others who are concerned about agriculture, and if you live in a small community, or if you're in agribusiness, or if your father or grandfather were farmers, you ought to be concerned. I happen to believe, and I serve on the committee, we've heard a lot of witnesses representing many, many points of view. I believe that by and large we have a good, sound farm program right now. It gives the farmers more freedom, ease and more control. And I've said to my friends in Kansas and other places, oh, it needs some adjustments. We've got to adjust the target prices. We've got to raise the loan rates. But by and large, it's the direction the farmers want to go. We're finally getting the government off your back. And I think most farmers appreciate that. I also think that most farmers understand that organized labor plays a very important role in this country, and they should. They should. Labor leaders represent hundreds of thousands and millions of workers. But I don't think labor leaders ever ought to have the last word when it comes to policy, whether it's farm policy or economic policy or foreign policy or whatever. Now, someone asked, and I'll be very frank to confess, that we listened to George Meany once on the embargoes. We've learned our lesson. Where has George Meany been lately? You knew who the candidate of organized labor is. It's Governor Carter. Someone asked Meany why he didn't run for president. He said, why step down? He's calling the shots. He's calling the shots. And if Carter's elected president, there are going to be two hotlines in the White House. One's going to go to Russia, and the other the AFL-CIO headquarters, direct to Mr. Meany. He's going to have that much influence over the Carter administration. But he's not going to have that much influence over the working men and women, many who belong to organized labor and the labor unions, because they're concerned about spending. They're concerned about taxes. They're concerned about gun control, registration of handguns, advocated only by the Democrats. And only 11 senators voted to register handguns in America, and one of those was Senator Mondale. And it's in their platform. And I want to say a word about spending. Governor Carter's gone to the South where he talks like a conservative. He comes here and talks like a conservative. He goes somewhere else, New York City, and talks like a liberal. Well, the New York Liberal Party endorsed him about 2.5 weeks ago. They don't endorse moderates. They don't endorse conservatives. You've got to be a litmus paper liberal to get the endorsement of the New York Liberal Party. And if that isn't enough, and I like Senator Mondale, we've served together. When he votes yes, I vote no. When he votes no, I vote yes. I don't dislike Walter Mondale, but I know who he represents and who helps him in his campaign and where he spends his time campaigning. I also know that he has about a 94-95% ADA rating. That's not the American Dairy Association. That's not the American Dental Association. That's the Americans for Democratic Action, the most liberal group in America. So I want to make it very clear, as another man used to say, perfectly clear, He always said that when he was in doubt, as I look back on it, but... But I want to make it very clear. Very, very clear that you have a choice. And you're going to make the difference in the state of Ohio and across this land. And you're going to make the choice. You can have that liberal ticket of Carter and Mondale. You can have bigger government, bigger spending programs, higher taxes. Or you can have the moderate to conservative ticket of Jerry Ford and Bob Dole. Two four-letter words you can get used to. F-O-R-D and D-O-L-E. And let me say to my farm friends, many of you are aware what the capital gains tax treatment is. You go back to an Associated Press interview that Governor Carter had just 10 days ago. He's had a lot of interviews lately. I'm not sure you've read them all, but... Many people are still looking at the pictures. But some have read the interviews. Some have read Associated Press. Some have read the line where he says he doesn't think most Americans want their taxes lowered. Anybody here who doesn't want their taxes lowered? We brought a doctor with us to take care of anyone in that condition. He also said, and he said this, I didn't say it, he said it. We ought to tax all income alike. All income ought to be treated the same. In other words, if you sold a piece of farm machine you've had for several years, you couldn't take capital gains on it. You'd pay straight ordinary income tax on it. It would double your taxation. The same with your land. And I just say very honestly and very candidly and very sincerely, we're not perfect. We've made mistakes. But it ought to be very clear to the American farmer and those who depend on the American farmer. First, they ought to understand that farmers are consumers too. But the American farmer and those in agribusiness and those in rural America ought to clearly understand there's a great difference in the Ford Dole ticket and the Carter Mondale ticket. Now, I've talked with President Ford about agriculture. I'm not going to give you any snow job. I'm just going to say that he told me come January, when he's in the White House and I'm somewhere else driving around the White House, whatever the vice president does, planning ahead or whatever. They have a lot of time for planning. Somebody said, why do you want to be vice president? I said, well, it's indoor work and no heavy lifting. But one thing President Ford has told me, he wants me to have a direct role in the area of agricultural exports. Maybe I can be your number one salesman in the world. But I'll work for the farmer. I think I understand the farmer. I understand the future of agriculture lies in our export markets. And that's really what it's all about. So I say take a hard look at us. Take a hard look at us. And look at those 65 new or increased spending programs and Democrat platform. You're all taxpayers. Look at those 22 new or increased or expanded agencies called for in the Democrat platform. You don't find those in the Republican platform. We figured up the cost of five, just five of those 65 programs, $100 billion plus, $100 billion. And where does it come from? Well, either more taxes or more inflation. And you've had enough of each. And I say it's time to take a look at the existing programs. It's time we talk about the quality of government and the quality of our leadership. And I want to ask finally, because some people say, well, you came here, you didn't ask for our help. I would get down on my hands and knees, but that's reserved for another candidate. I would just say as earnestly as I can that we need your help. We'll appreciate your help. We understand the importance you play in the American economy. We understand if it was not for agriculture, we'd really be in trouble as far as our international balance of payments are concerned. We understand the value of exports. We understand the value of a free agriculture. And we're going to make it work with your help. But to do that, you've got to make the choice. You've got to give us the opportunity. Not for our sake. I've already figured out if Ford makes it, I'm going to make it. But I don't really care about that. Not because you're Republicans and we may be Republicans. I hope there's some Democrats and independents in the audience. But because I believe we're headed in the right direction, not just insofar as agriculture is concerned, but insofar as spending is concerned and tax reform is concerned and the defense of our country is concerned. And that's really what it's all about. Getting a little hoarse myself. That's a good time to stop, I guess, when you can't talk anymore. But I want to make sense, common sense, no promises, no frills, only responsible government, where we take a look at the existing programs, do away with the bad and keep the good and save the taxpayers some money. You know, it's not illegal to reduce government spending. But no law says we've got to spend more every year of your money. And someone asked me the other day in a question, is it illegal to pay some on the national debt? I don't think so. We're going to check that out. So I just say, for the good of America, let's vote and work for a man, President Ford, who's the same man today he was 2 years ago, the same honest, open, candid man. And if you watched the debate, you saw the confidence and the competence and the leadership projected by President Ford. And that's what it's all about. We need your help. Thank you very much.
Let me just say first what a pleasure it is to be with you today. We've had a wonderful trip through Ohio. We've been rolling through your beautiful countryside. And really, you just feast your eyes and feast your soul on this lovely area. And also, it's a joy to us to see this tremendous crowd here today and to have the very warm welcome that you have given us. Bob mentioned being in Russell, Kansas, his hometown, the day after he was nominated for the vice presidency. And the reason that he was there was because President Ford wanted to launch the campaign in rural America, in agricultural America, and in the heartland. And that was a great day for us. And the president, being the very kind and thoughtful and compassionate man that he is, suggested that before we left Russell, that we escort Bob's mother, Mrs. Dole, home to her front steps. And so this was not in the schedule, and we veered off the schedule a little and went to Bob's home. And some of you may have seen the picture that was resulted from that meeting, because when we got up on the front steps, Mrs. Dole could not find her front door key. And so while Bob stood between the president and his mother, not knowing which way to turn, I tried to find the key for her, and we finally got it in a little secret hiding place. So several days later, I called his mother and wanted to check on her, and I think I discovered right then where my husband gets that sense of humor that he has evidenced today. Because Mrs. Dole said, I said, how are you doing with all this whirlwind of activity around you? She said, oh, I'm doing fine. I've just been talking with a reporter, and I've suggested that I should challenge Miss Lillian to a debate. She also said that she'd been hearing from a lot of people across the country after this picture made the newspapers of the lost key. And she said, all these people are telling me to change my hiding place because everybody in the country knows where I keep the door key now. But that was the beginning of a great campaign for us. We really sort of hit the ground running, and we've been going ever since. And I'm one of those bureaucrats that you hear about up in Washington. I've been working for the federal government for some time, and I decided to take a leave of absence from my job so that I could work full-time in the campaign. So I sent my salary back to the U.S. Treasury recently to help reduce the national debt a little bit. And as I've told Bob, I'm now going to be living off a dole for the next couple of months. But when he proposed to me a year or so ago, he told me married life was going to be exciting, and I had no idea it was going to be quite this exciting. But we're having a great time going around the country, visiting with people, and relating to people, hearing their problems, their needs, their concerns. And not only do we want to tell you about President Ford and Bob Dole and how they stand on the issues, but we want to hear from you, too. We want to go back to Washington knowing what your needs are and your concerns are, because we want to be responsive to the American people. So let me just close by saying again how much we appreciate this great crowd and the warm welcome. And I feel when you've had a chance to study the issues and hear the candidates and where they stand on the issues, that you're going to be with us to celebrate a great victory on November 2nd. Thank you.
campaign's really picking up.
Well, I talked to some Park Ridge High School students today, and they were all very critical of Jimmy Carter. So I would say that based upon their remarks, the young people are switching strong for Ford. That's a good sign.
Yeah, we've had a lot of young people out. Been to a lot of.
Do you have any special campaign ideas right now? There's talk of a special campaign plan to go underway right now. What do you have anything in mind right now at this second?
Well, we're I've been in Illinois and Ohio and back in Illinois again tonight, going to Pennsylvania tomorrow. We're just trying to stay busy. I don't know of any special plans. We think there's a lot of movement in the campaign. The movement's in our direction away from Governor Carter, and we just hope it continues till November 2nd.
Senator Richard Nixon apparently thinks he's the victim of a partisan plot and not guilty of what the country thinks he's guilty of in Watergate. Do you agree with that assessment?
I haven't read what he had to say.
Senator Dole, would you now agree that Governor Carter was misinterpreted in that AP story about median income?
No.
Does that mean 50% of the working families?
All I know is what I read, and as far as I'm concerned, he said what he said. He said median income. Median income is $14,000 a year. He can't change the interview now.
Well, you also said that the median income of college students was $19,000.
All right, yeah. No, we're not misinterpreted. We stuck with that.
That the median income of college students is $19,000?
For someone out of school, a college graduate, median income per family is about $19,000 out of school.
That's not what he originally said.
But Governor Carter is trying to get off the hook. Just let him wiggle.
How serious is the
proposal? Could you explain to us that you said this morning that there was evidence of impending disaster, that Governor Carter was criticizing the media, and yet you took off in the same speech criticizing the New York Times as a newspaper with all the news?
No, I wouldn't.
Now, is that evidence of impending disaster in
your
campaign?
No. He had a very private meeting with 12 reporters. I thought an effort to intimidate the media. I'm not trying to intimidate anyone. I just don't have to agree with everything that's said in any paper or any other form of communication.
Why attack the media? Isn't that the same thing?
I wasn't attacking the media.
Well, but Senator you criticized him for complaining about his press coverage, didn't you?
I said mine right out in public. I didn't go back, lock myself up with 12 reporters and complain about the media. You know, that's... I'm not trying to intimidate the media, and I hope the media is not trying to intimidate me.
He was innocent, that he was done a great injustice. Do you feel he was innocent?
I hope so.
I haven't read the report.
Hi,
I don't think he was innocent.
You don't think he was innocent of the crimes?
No, I think after you've read the memoirs or whatever the report is, I haven't even read that, but I think based on all the evidence, there was certainly some evidence there. I can't rehash that without having read the report.
You were the chairman of the Republican National Committee when a lot of this stuff was going on, the committee to re-elect the president. Right. Did you know that a lot of this was going on? Or did you have a feeling that something was wrong at that time?
No, we were sort of on the outside looking in. They had the money, and we understood what our role would be, and that was to be with the party's apparatus around the country. I was the chairman. I did a lot of speaking. I think we had about $4 million. I don't remember the exact amount. The committee to re-elect the president had some, I don't know, $40 to $50 million. Everyone knew where the action was. I think I was probably the first one to mention Watergate inside the White House in a public meeting, but we had no knowledge of really anything.
You've got some debates coming up with Mr. Mondale. There's been a lot of talk that the first debate between the president and Mr. Carter was a draw, that it was kind of boring. Do you feel that your debate with Senator Mondale will
be a draw?
A bit more interesting?
Well, I don't know. I didn't know the first debate was a draw. Every poll I saw said Ford clearly won. I don't know of any other poll. But
Notwithstanding that, I think, you know, many felt it was sort of a stand-up joint press conference and lacked a clear tinge of debate. I don't know what format ours will, what shape ours will take. There's some meeting, or at least there was a proposed meeting in Atlanta tomorrow. I'm going to have to check on that for a couple of days. Discuss the format, discuss the site, discuss the length. And I don't know what's transpired or what will transpire. But it'll be, I hope, interesting. I'm not under any illusion it's going to be significant, because we are number two on the tickets. And we can't make policy. We can't say in the first 100 days I'll do this, or Mondale will do this. We may not do anything the first 100 days if we're a vice president, but it'll be interesting.
Well, what are you going to talk about? What would you like to get across in that?
I think we both would probably like to stress that we're qualified and could serve as president, and of course could serve as vice president. Maybe what our special roles might be. But beyond that, it would appear to me that one of our responsibilities or obligations or opportunities, however you look at it, would be to sort of shore up our candidate's position. I would shore up Ford's, he might shore up Carter's in certain areas.
Do you think the pardon, as you travel around the country, the pardon with President Nixon, does that keep coming up again and again this year?
It comes up at nearly every press conference, but beyond that, we've had questions from the audience. I've never had anybody raise it in the audience. The press raises it, not every time, but they sort of feed on that. That's about all.
I heard there was some discussion today about intimidation by the press.
Oh, I talked about Governor Carter's, secret or semi-secret or private meeting with reporters where he felt put upon by the press, which indicates to me that he's in some difficulty.
Do you ever feel put upon?
Oh, I think the scrutiny is very close, but I haven't called everybody together on the plane and cajoled them or otherwise indicated our displeasure. If I have any displeasure, I'll say it openly.
Okay, thank you, Senator.
About the comments about the Nixon book, do you think that former President Nixon was innocent of the charges that were brought against him?
Well, there's never been any trial, you know, and to pick out somebody's promotion piece and comment on it without even having read it, I think would do a disservice to the public as well as anybody who might be involved. I'm not prepared to say, without even having read the book, a lot of charges made, and the president did step down, which always indicate, I think, most Americans must have been something there. So from that standpoint, I'd say, you know, if you were totally innocent, maybe you wouldn't have stepped down, but I can't comment on the book.
Was he done an injustice by the American people?
I'm not certain he said the American people. I think he said it was, again, I'm just reciting, recalling what I read very quickly in a paper today by political harassment or whatever you call it. And there, you know, I guess if you're on one side and you're the minority and you're harassed by the majority, you can say that. But again, that's a conclusion he made. I can't make his conclusion. I don't know what he knows. He said he didn't know about the Watergate. He should have checked more with his staff. I know that. He should have talked to some of us instead of some of those.
Well, I mean, you were the chairman of the Republican National Committee at the time. And obviously, you didn't, at least you said at the time, you didn't know much about what was going on. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. That hasn't changed a bit. We were sort of on the outside. They had the money. They had a very close, as any president has, they had a little close circle, and they wanted to keep it a small circle. I went to cabinet meetings. I didn't go to political strategy meetings except a couple of times, and they felt I was getting a little upset. I was called down to the White House, sort of a stroking session, but you know, I had speaking to you. I did a lot of that. I was good at that. I did a lot of it for the party. I was very busy, so I didn't quarrel with not having a big role in the committee to re-elect the president, but they had 40-some million dollars. We had four as a party, so we did the best we could.
Well, was Richard Nixon driven from office by the media and by his political enemies?
Oh, I think that would be an exaggeration.
What drove him from office?
Oh, I think a whole series of factors. I think the fact that he had really little support left in the Congress. I think had there been a strong, even though it might have been a a strong minority. I remember when someone said there weren't 10 senators, I think I may have said that, left who would stand with the president. I'm not certain I could name those 10. But, you know, every base of support eroded, and with that erosion came his resignation.
Has the Republican Party learned anything from Watergate?
Well, the Republican Party was involved in Watergate, so as a party, we're taking some of the brunt now of Watergate. We're being, I think to some extent, not very much criticized for something we had nothing to do with. You know, we had no part in Watergate. Senator Ervin said, had they left, this was in his findings, the Watergate Committee, and they left the campaign to Senator Dole and Lawrence O'Brien, he referred to both chairmen, there never would have been a Watergate.
Well, what about the pardon? Certainly the President of the United States had something to do with that. What effect has that had upon this campaign, this election, and the future of presidential politics?
I think it may have had some little effect. We go all over the country and we take questions from the audience. The only question about the pardon comes generally from the press. I think they toss it around and work it over. But I haven't had many people respond that way. That doesn't mean they're not thinking about it, but when it gets down to they're concerned about the future of the country, how Mr. Carter views the issues, how President Ford views the issues. And we think that the election will be decided on that, not on something that happened 2 years ago.
Senator Dole, your opposite number on the Democratic ticket, Senator Mondale, is saying that President Ford is dodging and ducking questions from the media concerning Watergate investigations on his own congressional campaign. What's your reaction to Mondale's statement?
You know, Senator Mondale's a freewheeler, and he likes to go out and cut away and slash away, and we'll see.
What do you mean, we'll see?
Well, just let him go ahead. Let him give him an up rope, and we'll see what happens.
You think Mondale's going to hang himself?
Oh, I didn't suggest that, not in that sense. I think there'll be a little political hanging on November 2nd. Two of us are going to hang. We hope it's them.
Senator, what in your opinion is going to really determine the outcome of this election?
Well, I think, and again, it's not based on any surveys that I've taken, but it's going to be which candidate. I'm talking about Ford or Carter, but I don't think either Mondale or Dole are going to make that much difference. We're just sort of the tail of the dog here. But which candidate projects confidence and competence, and above all, leadership? The American people are looking for leadership. And I think also it's going to be philosophical. I don't think the American majority of voters, want a liberal president with a liberal Congress. They want someone to act as a check and a balance. And again, that gives Ford a good chance on November 2nd.
Senator Dole, as you said, Senator Dole, there's been some talk today that you're getting a little thin-skinned about the media coverage. All the New York Times, all the news that's fit to tent and that kind of thing. Do you think the media coverage of this campaign has been biased?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think I'm thin-skinned a bit. Apparently the New York Times may be a little thin-skinned, but I made reference today earlier to Governor Carter's taking the press to the woodshed in a 90-minute closed session, indicating his great concern, an effort to intimidate the press. We haven't done that. We've been traveling the press for 30-some days. I made a public comment this morning, and later was asked about the New York Times. I said very casually and no hostility that they're not for us. They've been doing a job on me almost daily. You know, that's their right. I said that's their right. That's not any problem that I can see.
One of the things in the press today is President Nixon's claim in his memoirs, The Advance, that he is innocent of Watergate. Now, what's your reaction to that? And secondly, as I recall, it was Senator Robert Dole that tried to get a resolution through the Senate to take the Watergate hearings behind closed doors and turn off the television lights and turn off access to the public. Do you have any recollections of that?
Oh, yes, very, very clear recollections. We felt, I think most Americans felt, they had gone on and on and on. We didn't suggest they stop the investigation. We suggest they get on with the investigation, do what they were going to do, and stop the daily public spectacle of the show. As far as the former president's innocent or guilt, there was never any trial, no impeachment trial. Anyone who can sit in judgment, I guess, can do that. It's a free country. You can make up your own mind without even having seen the memoirs. I haven't even seen the memoirs. I saw a headline in the Chicago Tribune. That's about all I've seen. But President Nixon would know whether or not he's giving us the absolute, unvarnished truth. I don't know. I'm not in the position of that.
But would you ask again today to take the Watergate hearings behind closed doors, put it back behind the committee closed doors?
Well, I think the committee did a good job. Senator Irvin made a finding there that pleased me very much. But my point was then, and is now, that let's going to have an investigation. Let's have the investigation. That was the point of that.
What about the investigation of President Ford's golf outing, so to speak?
Well, comment on that? I think that's a retroactive morality. If you can't even have friends in politics, they're just great. Surge, and I don't know where else they're looking when it comes to these things, but maybe they ought to look around a little more.
What about campaigning here in Chicago? Do you think it's futile to campaign in this area, particularly in the Chicago area, in the face of the Daley machine? And by the way, Mayor Daley said today the Carter campaign appears to be in a slump.
Right, well, I think he's right, and I commend the governor, Mayor Daley, for that comment. Not about Governor Carter, but his campaign is in a slump. He's given a great many interviews. He said a number of things that he can't pull back. He is in some difficulty with the press. We're going to get some votes in Chicago. We're going to help Sam Young tonight, hopefully.
What about campaigning in this area, though? We haven't seen very much of you or the president in the Chicago area.
Well, I've been four or five stops in Illinois. I'll be in Chicago again next week, so you'll see a lot of me in Chicago. We think it's a very, very important state. Of course, it's a very key territory. We're going to do quite well in the suburbs and downstate Illinois.
Jane, Ron?
I said that's the All-American football night. Every high school team in America is playing. And if I had a choice, I might go to the football game.
What did you think of the list?
Well, not unless they tune in the wrong station. I don't, I'd be very serious about it. We take ourselves too seriously sometimes. We're not going to have any great impact on the election. Somebody asked, why do you want to be vice president? I said, well, it's indoor work and no heavy lifting. But beyond that, we're pretty much constrained by what President Ford has said, and he's constrained by what Governor Carter said. We can't go out and make policy and say, in the first 100 days, I'll do this. We may not do anything in the first 100 days.
Well, you said you're not going to have much impact on the presidential campaign, but they said one of the reasons Bob Dole was selected was because Bob Dole is a grab-him-by-the-neck campaigner.
Well, from that standpoint, when you get down to when you've got Carter and Ford debating and Mondale and Dole debating, you've got four debates, and people want to listen to two of them. I assume they're going to listen to two of the Ford-Carter debates. I just say that we've got to realize that we're number two. We try harder, but we're still number two. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sam?
Strongest and longest defenders of Richard Nixon today, he once again proclaimed his innocence. What's your reaction to that statement?
Well, you want me to comment on an excerpt that hasn't been released and a book that hasn't been written. And I think I'm fairly alert, but I just can't... don't have those powers, and I assume some would like to replay the whole Nixon thing and the Watergate thing, but I just don't see anybody make any valid comment on just someone's leak to the press, and I don't intend to.
You don't have any feeling about his guilt, for instance?
Oh, I may have some feelings, but again, there was never a trial, and pretty hard to set in judgment. Governor Carter does that. He did it with former President Johnson, that had rushed to the phone and apologized to his widow. I don't want to get in that situation. I think I had my own views on former President Nixon. As I said, his base of support is totally eroded. There was no support left. And then came the resignation. And then came the pardon. And I felt, and I said at the time, I thought the pardon was premature. But, to get into whether or not he's guilty or innocent 2 years later without a trial based on someone... who's trying to sell a book to the highest bidder. Whatever I comment may have some effect on the price. I don't want to stifle the free enterprise system.
The Watergate issue surfaced again today. Sam Ervin says that President Ford has a lot of answers that the president attempted to halt the investigation of Watergate. Any right. reaction to that?
No, I don't know anything about the president attempting to halt. You mean when he said, a member of Congress? Or
yes, he said that Mr. Ford attempted to stop the Wright-Patton investigation of Watergate.
No, I can't comment on that. I think the president would be the best source. All I know is that Senator Ervin made a finding in the final report that had they left the campaign up to Senator Dole in 1972, there wouldn't have been a Watergate. That pleased me a great deal.
I can understand why. The stock market was off again today. It's being attributed to the softness in the economy. The leading economic indicators were off in August. Jimmy Carter says the only way, as a matter of fact, Mondale said in Milwaukee this afternoon, the only way that could be corrected is in a change of leadership. What's your response to that?
Well, I wouldn't expect Mondale to say anything else, but if that continues to show, then you could have some cause for alarm, but it generally takes, unless it's three months running, it's pretty hard to nail down. I think the economy's sound. There has been a slight pause. If we get all those spending programs advocated by Carter and Mondale, you better buckle your seatbelts and hang on.
You were noted for being very quick with a one-liner. Have you seen anything in this campaign that amuses you?
Oh, I've seen a lot that amuses me. Some of the things I do myself amuse me or bewilder me or surprise me, but... I've said we get a lot of kidding about being vice president. I've said it's indoor work and no heavy lifting and things of that kind. I think we have to remember that we are number two, and I keep reminding myself of that. We're not policymakers. We may be fair campaigners. I'm not even certain of that, but we do our best. I want President Ford elected. I figured out if he makes it, I'll make it. So we're working hard for President Ford.
Jimmy Carter said today that President Ford ought to call a news conference and explain to the American people why he allowed lobbyists to entertain him. What's your reaction to that?
I don't know about that, but I assume that Governor Carter never did that as governor. I think he ought to call a news conference and tell the American people why he tried to intimidate the press last week in a private meeting. That would make a great deal more sense.
Could you elaborate on that?
Well, it's my understanding, he reported in the Wall Street Journal, and I assume maybe some of the other reporters will report on it, that he's very upset. He felt he was getting a poor treatment from the press. And it's all an indication that he's in some difficulty, and he doesn't have that 15 to 20 to 30% margin anymore. He can't be the kind, gentle, talkative soul. And, he's given a lot of interviews, and some are going to haunt him. It's Playboy or Associated Press or Reader's Digest or whatever. And I think he sees some problems down the road. We're going to win the election, and I assume he's a little upset.
Mayor Daley says that as Illinois goes, so goes the nation. You can't win a national election without Illinois.
That's been here since 1920, right?
And he also says that Carter will carry Illinois. He says Carter is in a slump, but the Daley organization will work harder than ever, and Carter will win. What do you think?
Well, Mayor Daley is a very potent force. I don't underestimate Mayor Daley for one second. But I also believe we have a very strong ticket in this state, and Big Jim Thompson is going to be a great help to the Ford-Dole ticket. We find support growing in southern Illinois, downstate. There's a great deal of support in this area. I think we're going to carry Illinois, but I agree with Mayor Daley. It's a bellwether state, and we need it. We just hope we can have it on November 2nd.
Are you running on Thompson's coattails?
Well, as I've said, we'll either lead or follow as long as we're ahead on November 2nd. We're not too proud to grab on the coattails if they're going by. Jim Thompson's an outstanding candidate. We're going to ride on Sam Young's, too, if we can.
You talked about some of the Carter interviews. Would you have any comment to make on your lust life?
No, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. I just think it shows... lack of judgment. If the judgment's that poor on one little interview, I'd hate to have him have to make a big decision that affected the American people. This only affected him.
Do you have any suggestions about the debate format? There's been a lot of criticism of the presidential debate format. It's also been said that you and Mondale are much better speakers than Ford and Carter, and would probably do a much better program than they did. What would you suggest in terms of the format?
Well, I know at least there was proposed a meeting tomorrow in Atlanta with the Mondale-Doles people and work out a format, the location. Ours is going to come on Friday night, the 15th of October, which is football night in America. So if there are a few people around who don't go to football games, may tune in. I'm not certain it'll be a better debate. It seems to me that we have a responsibility to, he has to Carter, I have to Ford. I would guess ours could be sort of a cleanup operation, shoring up the strong points and picking away at weak points, in addition expressing our views on our qualifications. But the format, I think, does need some change. It needs to be livened up a bit. I think 90 minutes is too long, too.
Would you rather go uninterrupted with your opponent, a direct confrontation?
We do that in the Senate. I don't want to make certain we had a timekeeper, because Democrats have a way of hogging all the time, but particularly liberals, as he is. But I'm not suggesting that's the right format. I doubt that would be the right format.
Would you seriously suggest that the country would be in trouble with Jimmy Carter at the helm?
Oh, I'd seriously suggest that. In fact, I've stated that. It just seems to me, with a very liberal Democrat Congress, we want a Republican Congress. We're going to work for one. I don't see it happening. I'll be very realistic about that. We've got to have some check and some balance in this government of ours, and President Ford has provided that with 57 vetoes. Carter's indicated he'd sign anything. He criticized every veto of President Ford's. The only inference is that he would have signed all those bills. I don't think the American people, working men and women, anywhere in America, can just stand more and more spending programs, and that's the Carter platform. That's the liberal approach. Spend and spend and elect and elect, and that's essentially what it is.
You've been, if I understood you correctly, critical of the Ford campaign, and you thought that right after the convention he should have started moving instead of taking a vacation. What do you think about the way things are going now?
Well, you know, if you look at the polls and look at the enthusiasm and across the country, I would say they're going very well. The tempo is just about right. It's a very tough race. We're closing the gap. We're going to pull it off on November 2nd. There's a lot of movement in the campaign. We've been told we're in great difficulty with farmers. We were with about 1,000 this afternoon in Ohio, and we think things are picking up pretty well.
Thank you very much, sir.